Dr. Michael Roizen.
Dr. Michael Roizen.
You, the Owner's Manual Radio Show.
You're listening to You, the Owner's Manual Radio Podcast. This is 1003B. The B's are always the guest segments. The A's, of course, the latest medical news of the week and what it means to you. By in the thousands means we've been doing this over 19 years. On 1040, that's a funny number, 1040, we will have our anniversary for our 20th year of doing weekly podcasts. So we'll do a big celebration talking about longevity. And that actually is one of the subjects that's of interest to our guest, Joe Bakhti, who is the founder and chief executive officer of QuantGene. We're going to let him tell us about his work on the machine learning sequencing technology and what he calls, and this is the deep genome and the era of what I would guess he would call it, the era of precision medicine. We are brought to you, as usual, by Persona Nutrition. You can use Persona Nutrition. Persona experts cut through the hype and confusion about supplements and vitamins. You can get supplements customized to your needs. I do, too. Visit mypersona.com, mypersona, P-E-R-S-O-N-A.com, and take the free online assessment. Joe, thank you very much for coming on. Tell us, how did you get into, because you took a circuitous route into medicine, so tell us how you got into medicine and why you're into precision medicine now.
Absolutely. First, thanks, Dr. Roizen, to have me on the Owner's Manual. And it's a tremendous feat that you have over 1,000 episodes now. So that's very impressive. Thanks for doing such an amazing job in our field. Yeah, so I started out, very early on in medicine, in the sense that I was born to two very passionate life science researchers and doctors, my parents. And then was listening to my dad, who was a professor for microbiology and infectious diseases for a very long time, and learned a lot about microbiology while I was growing up. And then when I was 19, I decided I am also interested in things outside medicine. And I had the feeling I heard so much about medicine, it's time to look into some other things. And I decided to study economics and psychology. And from there, was interested in business, went into M&A, mergers and acquisitions, and some finance-related fields, but always kept that very close bond to medicine through my family. Many family members were researchers and doctors and bioengineers, and we always had these discussions throughout my escapades in the business world. And then finally, after quite some time, my investment interest brought me back into biotech, specifically precision medicine and sequencing, and the combination of these tremendous new data sources with artificial intelligence, or as we call it, just intelligence, right? Because it doesn't always need to be artificial. It can be complex systems, hybrid systems of AI, humans, software, statistics. And that full circle bringing me back into medicine. And in 2015, we found something very, very interesting out. We discovered something about genetics and cancer genomics when I was at UC Berkeley doing some things. And that led to the foundation of QuantGene. And now we are 5 years in, and that was an extremely exciting journey, one of the most exciting things I've done in my life, diving deep into the future of medicine, precision medicine, and connecting the deep human genome with, universal medical intelligence, like the ability to scan and compare deep genomic insights and genetic insights with the world of clinical research and delivering that to patients. And we can discuss that a little bit more.
Well, let me go over some of it, because you actually this is such an interesting, you have a master's in economics and psychology from one of Germany's leading institutions. And you started at Omnicon and WPP, which is a formidable advertising group. So what were you doing at WPP and Omnicon, and how did that prepare you for this?
Yeah, so I had multiple stations in my career in corporate, and they were all within the Omnicom or WPP group. So these groups are very large holding companies, and they own a very large number of very large advertising and marketing and consulting agencies. So the whole world of media and advertising is basically owned by very few groups, and the two largest in the world are Omnicom and WPP. And the way it works, if you're a McDonald's or you're Pfizer, any large company, you have, you know, McDonald's back then had spent about $2 billion a year on advertising. It goes into these groups. And then these groups have all kinds of different agencies, famous agencies like J. Walter Thompson or Gilvy. And they take on these clients and these accounts, and they basically deliver the entire communication and marketing solution. That includes, you know, TV advertising and online and digital, but it also includes media strategies. It includes consulting, market research, like the entire thing you need to make a product sellable and drive sales. And I was on the strategy side initially when I joined as a strategy consultant. And so that's where you look at all kinds of different companies of clients, very large clients. Some of them biotech back then, I already had like a proclivity. And then you try to help them understand, if you spend that much money, that's a lot of money, what do you have to do globally in order to make this a success and drive your sales and brand loyalty and get your message across? Yeah, and I did this for quite a while and then went more into mergers and acquisitions. So these groups are so large. WPP back then had over 100 different agencies. And the large agencies, they can have up to 18,000 employees. So you can imagine that's an enormous workforce and complexity. They have to always be on the lookout and, you know, try to buy more agencies or buy new technologies, capabilities, especially with the rise of digital and online marketing. So that was a whole world that is where you have to look at a lot of different companies and make many complicated decisions how you want to expand your capability.
So I take it you learned how to use multiple inputs in making decision. And I guess that's part of what QuantGene does. So QuantGene, tell us about QuantGene now, which is and what is the goal of QuantGene? As you said, you've been doing it for 5 years. And are essentially trying to create the future of medical diagnostics, as I understand it.
Yes, and you're totally right. It's this background of mine that I'm this weird blend between an economist and someone who really likes to look at, you know, complex economic structures, and someone who grew up in a medical family and has always this. I always was fascinated by medicine and what's happening. And that is really what defines QuantGene as a company, how we build it and how we lead it, that we have that unique, I think, combination of understanding the healthcare system and what actually is a problem in the healthcare system and where the upside is and what could be done. And that's why we do QuantGene. So QuantGene at its core is built around the insight that, you know, the medicine as we know it is kind of really an outdated model. There is huge potential that is not being utilized. And if you think about how medicine works today and worked in the past, you basically have a patient and that patient comes to a doctor and the patient has maybe some records or has like a little piece of paper that has something on it, and the patient tells the doctor what the problem is, then the doctor searches kind of his brain and thinks about, okay, what could that be? And, you know, has an answer. It's like, to put it simple, that's kind of how it works mostly. And the future as we see it in medicine vastly expands two things. On the patient side, instead of having a little piece of paper or say, oh, my shoulder hurts, the patient has millions, if not billions, of data points that he brings to the doctor that can be through blood tests and genetic tests. It can be through imaging. It can be through a combination of all kinds of things. So you capture a vastly larger set of data, including deep genomics. On the physician side, of course, if you just swamped an average primary care physician with a billion data points, he's probably not going to know what to do with it. So on the physician side, you need an intelligence system that takes in all that data and tells the physician, what does this data actually mean? And in order to do that, you have to build something, and that's exactly what Quantgene is all about, that has basically three layers of logic to it. The first layer is you have to be able to, in real time, scan all of the medical information in the world, including all data sets, databases, and all clinical publications. That is the vision we have, and that's actually what we already built. So that gives you access to every single study and data point in the world in real time. You need then an artificial intelligence layer to figure out, okay, what of these millions and millions of papers and data points is actually important for the patient based on the data you fed the system. And then the third layer that we added is what we call a medical intelligence unit. So this is a bunch of people, a team, and in our case, in Quantgene, we have 10 people in our medical intelligence unit. And these people are diverse. There are two physicians, one very senior, one more junior. We have genetic counselors, but we also have biology PhDs, and we have machine learning PhDs, and we have software guys and data guys. So that team takes the data that it gets from the AI, pre-filtered, goes through it, and makes the final decision what gets pushed to the physician. So the physician gets a very, very filtered version of all that intelligence that is very easy to understand and can then make decisions based on that. And then tell the patient or push that to the patient portal so the patient finally gets whatever the physician decides to give him. Now, what the outcome of that system is that you have a vastly deeper understanding of a patient. And when we do that, we actually see an enormous difference in terms of what comes out of that with genetics alone, like just using clinical grade genetics tests. We see far more, you know, drug interactions. We see far more disease risk predispositions and all these things than a conventional clinical grade test, genetics test.
Now, some would say, let me just stop for a second, Joe, and say, now some would say that, in fact, a lot of it depends on the accuracy of that information. So let me give you an example, a personal example. When you do my genome, it looks like I should be a slow metabolizer of coffee. But as someone who has 10 cups a day, obviously something is peculiar with that. So what I'm saying is sometimes, because we've got an epigenome, and because we have differences that we've acquired or changed in our metabolic rate, not all of the information, and in other words, if you look at it, and then there are behaviors. So, for example, and I'll try and get a specific, Craig Venter has a prostate cancer gene and a predisposition to that. But he hasn't changed his behavior to avoid that process. And I'm using Craig because he was the and is the known founders or discoverers or uncoverers of the human genome. And so What role does your, in other words, it seems to me that one of the things lacking in a lot of the precision medicine is how do we learn to motivate, how do we physicians learn to motivate patients to do the behaviors that their objective data and that we know may be good for them? And then secondly, how do we take account for the errors or what the predispositions? And so my human genome may say I am more likely to be a slow metabolizer of caffeine than not, but I clearly am not. So those are two separate questions, if you will. What do we do about human behavior, and what do we do about likelihood versus actualities?
These are great questions. So let me start with the scientific question. How do we present this data? The key of the system we build, our medical intelligence engine, is it doesn't try to be smarter than it can be. We don't tell a physician, oh, don't tell this patient to not drink coffee. What we tell the physician is, of these millions of publications right now, here are 12 that we selected that we think could be very relevant. Here's what each of them say. First off, it might be a problem with caffeine. Second, okay, this drug should be given at probably 50% of the dose, and so on and so forth. You as a physician now better click on that button and look at the summary of the study and decide yourself, is that a good study? Is it high evidence? Was it, we have some marks on it that tells you how many citations it has. So we are not trying to make the decision for the physician. It's a decision support system, but it's highly effective. It presents data that is most likely relevant and allows the physician very quickly to look into these papers and say, that's not enough evidence for me. But it allows the physician to very quickly get a much deeper insight of all kinds of possible suspicions and problems with the patient. So if the physician already sees these problems, some of them, let's take a drug interaction, right? If the physician sees, oh, my patient takes like these 5 drugs, there's nothing that is weird about that. I did everything by the book, everything standard of care, but he has these weird like headaches and all kinds of problems. And the physician can't figure out why that is. We find a study that basically tells the physician, well, with that variant that patient has, there is a low evidence level study actually done in Sweden or something that showed that a significant share of these people had these side effects, and reducing the dose for that drug actually solved the problem. That study normally wouldn't show up in a genetics report because it's low level evidence, but in this context of this patient, it might be the key that the doctor needs to make actually a decision. So the way we present this information is it needs to be intelligently served to the physician, summarized, but giving the physician context and allowing the physician to make these decisions. So it's more like visibility and not advice. We just allow the physician to see everything, not to tell him or her what to do. And that works very well, actually. That's like giving you superpowers in order to see everything.
And we're clearly going to need that because medical information is increasing so exponentially, so to such a great degree. Now, the second thing is, how do we change behavior?
Yes, and here, that's an even more complex question. What we see is the biggest argument, right, for patients is if they know if they change the behavior, it will make them clearly healthier, right? And in many cases, one problem is that the knowledge we convey is too diffuse, saying like, well, you have a 2x, increased prostate cancer risk, and you should like drink a little less milk or alcohol or whatever. And it's very hard for patients to really relate to that because they say, I always, did that, so maybe I keep doing it. It's not something that is, I mean, what you see is if people get a heart attack, for example, and have a real episode of something, they are much more compliant than if it's just preventative. Because in the preventative case, they can't connect the dots psychologically as easily. And so I think what is important is that systems like that focus first on a population that tends to be very compliant. That's our theory here. So the people who are already into that kind of thing are naturally compliant because they really like being compliant with precision medicine, and then use these cohorts, the innovators and early adopters on the patient side, right? Biohackers and people who are really into making sure they do everything right and use data for it. The more you focus on a population like that, the more clear the population level outcomes will be. And I think that is a key driver for adoption, right? If you see, if you have 10,000 members in a system and you can show to everyone, look, they've extended their average lifespan by 5 years compared to a control cohort of the same socioeconomic background, for example. So my theory on that is, instead of just seeing all patients as the same and looking at the average American patient, I think it is smart to actually prototype these new precision medicine systems with different segments of the population, which comes naturally because it tends to be the people who want to pay for it, not who can pay for it. I think it's that's like the wealthy versus non-wealthy discussion, but the prices are not that high. It's more like an engagement question. Do you want to spend $99 a month on that? And people who say yes to that tend to be also extremely compliant. And use that population to make your case. And I think the stronger that case is, the more you see adoption and compliance for people further down the adoption curve.
We've been talking with Joe Bottke, the founder of QuantGene, QuantGene. And he has told me his website is a very unusual one, so I'm going to give you the name of it. It is Choose Serenity, www.chooseserenity.com, a great website name, Choose Serenity. So you can find out more about him and about QuantGene there. This is really one of the future ideas in medicine. And he also has a strong interest in longevity. I hope to have him back to talk more about that at a future time. We, of course, are sponsored as usual, and this is 1003B. We are sponsored as usual, as we have been for a number of years, by Persona Nutrition. I'm excited that Persona is still our sponsor. They're a wonderful company because they simplify your choices about vitamins and supplements. You can take their free online assessment. It is a AI type assessment, so you'll learn through a decision tree what you're missing or not in your diet, and learn how to customize your needs and your nutritional needs. You can visit mypersona.com and take the free online assessment or talk freely to their nutritionists and dietitians. Mypersona.com. Dr. Bhakti, thanks very much for being on and for doing what you're doing to help physicians practice at a higher level. And I want to thank our engineer, Joe, also is his first name. Joe, thank you. But especially to our listeners, 50,000 or more of you a week download us. You can't all be wrong, so I thank you for doing it. Remember, the A segments are always the latest medical news of the week, and most of it is non-COVID. The B are these wonderful guests that will stretch you and me to better learning and thinking about life differently. Thanks again. We'll be back next week. And, of course, you can always download the A and the Bs. I do want to remind you of one of my favorites, which is 947B. About a year ago, Catherine Eban, Bottle of Lies, talked about the generic drug revolution. And another one was Robot Take the Wheel, about what's the likelihood of autonomous driving and autonomous, if you will, job creation and destruction. We'll be back again next week. Thanks very much, and look forward to talking with you and discussing the latest medicine with you then.